Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back for our second big Wednesday hour of Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Killett, your host. Trent Horn is our guest. Trent is the author, most recently, of Why We're Catholic and The Case for Catholicism, two fine books. One maybe more for the person who wants a more generalist view, and one who that would be Why We're Catholic. And then the other one, The Case for Catholicism, specifically answers Protestant objections to the Catholic faith, and it's maybe a little more technical or academic. Does that all seem fair, the way I described that, Trent?
Yes. Mark Brumley, the editor of Ignatius Press, described The Case for Catholicism as middle brow.
So middle brow. Wow.
It's not high brow, if you will.
But made it to middle brow.
But it's middle. Yeah. So yeah. It's something that I wrote Why We're Catholic. So yeah. Anybody with like an eighth grade education on up could read it and get a lot out of it. And honestly, the hardest part, both books were equally hard to write, but for different reasons. Case for Catholicism is a rigorous 900 footnotes, argument after argument, really diving into the sources about the Catholic faith. Why We're Catholic is an introductory book you could give to anyone on the whole faith, and trying really hard, even just to use words and language and examples that don't confuse people, that help bring them in. And so that can be hard too if you're used to using kinds of
Catholic
typical kinds of parlance or specialty big words, that in order to get your point across, you have to dial that back a little if you want to make your writing as accessible to as many people as possible.
Yeah, it's hard because we kind of swim in the Catholic water, and so you have certain words and phrases that are very common in that. And then if you use those with someone who's not swimming in that water all the time, you can be like not that.
Oh, absolutely. For example, the book is being reviewed right now, and part of the review so that it could hopefully receive an imprimatur and get that ecclesial approval and make it part of maybe a curricula, such as one that would be used in RCIA. During the review, there's different, sometimes we get suggestions like, oh, you could mention the Holy Eucharist in this part. And I'd like, oh, I'd love to, but I actually haven't gotten to the Holy Eucharist yet. So, if I just drop this right here, someone who's never heard of this would be like, oh, well, what's that? Always trying to – so that was Why We're Catholic, why it's a great introductory book to give to anyone. But if you want to go in-depth to the Protestant objections we hear against our faith, The Case for Catholicism, to me, is really the number one book on that subject now.
Again, our topic this hour with Trent Horn is, which Catholic moral teaching do you reject? Is there something that the Catholic Church holds as morally true that you suspect or maybe even hold may not be morally true? Please give us a call. We'd love to discuss it with you. 888-318-7884. We go now to Caleb in Fort Wayne, Indiana, watching on YouTube. Caleb, you are on with Trent Horn. Your question, please.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm sorry, but last time my phone was on mute, unfortunately.
Oh, I've done that before where you're talking like, I'm here. But yeah, like in Horton Hears a Who.
Sure.
Did you get my Horton Hears a Who reference? No? All right. Go ahead, Caleb.
Yeah, no, I feel you. Okay, well, again, I wanted to thank you for taking the call. And the one thing that the one major objection that I have to Catholicism in particular is this notion that the act of disbelieving is immoral, that it is, in fact, condemnable for one to reject the Catholic faith, for example, after having learned it. That to me doesn't seem like a moral precept, which is consistent with that of an absolute God.
Okay. Kayla, let me ask you a question then. What kind of moral precept do you think God should adopt when it comes to believing what he has revealed through divine revelation?
Well, I don't think that there can be one. I don't think that belief is any sort of act or action. I think that belief, in other words, isn't some sort of binary choice or or even fractal choice. It's not a choice. It's merely the act of being convinced of something.
So you make it sound like then our beliefs are just something that happened to us. We don't choose them. It's kind of like if I tell you, don't think about pink elephants, you're thinking about what?
Sure.
You're thinking about pink elephants. You know, so I think what you're saying is things get presented to us and then we either, it just kind of clicks or it doesn't. So how could we be held accountable for that?
Absolutely. There are going to be certain heuristics that tend to make us, that force us really to lean more one way or another. I think that there are a lot of different variables here, everything from genetic components to how you were brought up as a child to the level of indoctrination.
Caleb, are there any beliefs that people hold nowadays that you think are blameworthy, that you think, you shouldn't believe that, or holding people responsible for that, like racism or Holocaust denial? Because one problem with this view is I agree that some things just come into our minds, but other kind of beliefs we hold, we kind of will ourselves to believing it. We can sometimes even cling to an idea in spite of other evidence. So I think there are aspects of belief that our will is involved in. And so we can have control over which beliefs we're choosing to hold and which ones we aren't. Because I think you and I would agree there's certain beliefs that are bad to hold, right?
Well, sure. But I think what you've basically described there are merely levels of conviction. In other words, it might be silly to believe in Bigfoot, but some people do. But it's really just more so. I would even label something along those lines as hope more so than belief. Mm-hmm. But this exists on a continuum. So some people are going to believe some things more certainly than others, and there are certain things like Carl Sagan's dragon, right? Someone tells you they have a pet dragon, you're not going to believe that because it's extreme. But if somebody tells you they have they found a pet, or they found a dog and they brought it home, it's in their garage, you're not really going to just assume that that's a
right.
lie.
So, Caleb, I think where your struggle with belief here, because I think in general, we want people to, we hold them accountable to certain things, when it comes to belief. So if I promise to go to a friend's house to help him clean up on Saturday, and I get there and his house is locked and he went on a hike and he said, I didn't believe you were going to come over and I didn't believe I needed to call you to say I wouldn't be there. Those are beliefs we would hold him accountable for. I mean, his actions are accountable, but the actions flow from these beliefs. And we'd say, no, you shouldn't have believed that. So I think where you and I might be at differences is people being held responsible for certain kind of beliefs. And it sounds to me like you equate religious beliefs with kind of like extraordinary beliefs that contradict what we know about reality, like the belief that a dragon is under a table. Because for me, the reason I don't believe that is to me that contradicts fairly significant evidence that dragons don't exist, because if there were dragons, we would have more sightings of them. We would have archaeological, biological evidence of them, things like that. So that's why when I hear these arguments that skeptics and atheists make and borrow from Sagan's principle about extraordinary evidence, I would say belief in religious truths is not extraordinary in that sense of violating well-established empirical evidence for certain truths. But I would say, though, that if God exists and he reveals himself to us, we choose to either believe that or not believe that. We may have to, kind of nudge ourselves, like in Pascal's wagers, say, some things here I may not be sure about, but, I'm going to trust and I'm going to believe. Then I think we can be held responsible, and especially if we know something is true and we choose to reject it and stop believing it or stop following it. Then I think we can be held morally accountable for that. If you'd like more on that subject, though, I would definitely recommend our website at Catholic.com. My buddy Carlo Broussard has written a lot about natural theology and belief, and you may find some helpful articles there. But thank you so much for calling in and staying on with us.
Thanks, Caleb. We have to take a quick break. We'll be back with more Trent Horn and your Well, which Catholic moral teachings you reject? Oh, when we come back right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live with Trent Horn is coming right back.
January is Pro-Life Month, and to get as many people as we can involved in the pro-life cause, we're making Trent Horn's book, Persuasive Pro-Life, and his DVD, Making the Case for Life, available for just $5 each. That's a savings of over 70%. Both the book and the DVD were made specifically with you in mind, to help you engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue, and to give you the tools you need to change people's hearts and minds so that together we might build up a pro-life culture, one person, one conversation at a time. To get your copies of the book, Persuasive Pro-Life, or the DVD, Making the Case for Life, for just $5 each, just call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com.
Just like the saints of the Counter-Reformation, our own souls are in constant need of reform, of reconversion to God and His will for us. We struggle with sin. We become distracted in prayer. We find it hard to be loving and easy to be selfish. In Reform Yourself, Sean McAfee shows you how these magnificent saints can be guides to your own personal transformation. We all need to reform our souls. Let the saints who reformed the church show you how. Order your copy of Reform Yourself today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Trent Horn is our guest this hour on Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and we are discussing which Catholic moral teachings you might disagree with. Are there Catholic moral teachings, Catholic positions on right and wrong that you might say, I don't agree with that one? If that's the case, give us a call, please. We'd love to discuss it with you. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. We go now to Rob in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on Holy Family Radio. Rob, you are on with Trent Horn.
I appreciate you taking my call. Earlier on, when you were talking about nuclear war and how the church says it's okay to have an act of war as long as it prevents a greater evil, my understanding in World War II is that the Japanese, since it's an honor-based society, were teaching their women and their children to fight with swords and sticks and rifles and anything they could, and we would have had to do a ground invasion, causing, you know, us to fight a civilian army, basically. It seems like us dropping the nuclear bombs, and it took two of them to actually bring them to their knees. We gave them a chance after the first one, and they still wouldn't surrender. It seems like we were preventing a greater evil. I wondered what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah, and what I would say is that the just war doctrine does not say a war is acceptable if it prevents a greater evil. That's not an accurate summary of the doctrine. If you go to paragraph 2309, where the Catechism says is that war can be just when it's a response to damage inflicted by an aggressor that's lasting, grave, and certain. All other means of putting an end to it must be impractical or ineffective. There must be serious prospects of success. And the use of arms must not produce evils graver than the evil to be eliminated. However, you cannot justify an act in war by simply saying, well, if we do this, it prevents a greater evil, because that would be consequentialism. And the problem with that, if we start to think about it, is that if we allow that principle, then you could really justify any kind of war crime. If the principle is, well, if we do this act, less people will die in the long run, then you could justify anything. You could justify using. Imagine if we, you know, if now or even back then, I mean, you couldn't have this technologically, but, you know, I can think in my head now of like 10 different horrifying ways to attack an enemy to get them to surrender quickly. I mean, you could send in sleeper agents that kill civilians in the middle of the night secretly, manufacture a disease that only targets children under the age of 13. And most people would say in those cases, no, even if, you know, there, you know, people might die and we have this conflict, we must always avoid murder. There's a great article on this actually on our website at Catholic.com. By our current president, Christopher Cech. He wrote this, I think, before he was president of Catholic Answers, saying dropping the bomb on Hiroshima was wrong, period. And he quoted the philosopher Elizabeth Anscombe, and she said basically to this effect that, you know, we as civilized human beings must always avoid murdering one another because murder is one of the worst things we can do. So, Rob, I see where you're coming from in that, you know, we want to try to have the fewest number of people die, you know, in any kind of conflict. But if we choose to do evil things to accomplish that goal, sometimes we just have to let the goal happen. We can't resort to evil because then any evil's on the table. Do you see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I guess they were the aggressor, and we did have a prospect of winning. But I guess I see what you're saying. It was an evil because it was a civilian. It's a hard one for me, at least.
Yeah, it is. And I would say that there's also, of course, other historical elements to this about, you know, what could we have done? Could there are other ways to, you know, there are debates, of course, like why not use these nuclear weapons on, you know, a military force away from a population, detonated off the coast of Japan to demonstrate our power. And people say, well, that might not have worked. Da, da, da. I just think, though, that the principle we use when we have to engage in war, which is an ugly, awful thing that I pray no one ever has to engage in. It's nothing to be glorified. It's an awful, horrible thing. And anyone who has served in combat, and actually Chris Cech, read the article at Catholic.com. Just search Hiroshima at Catholic.com. And the article from Chris Cech, I think, is very meaningful because our president, Chris Cech, is served in the Marines. You know, I almost said former Marine, but I think there's like an adage there really is no such thing as a former Marine. You know, once Semper Fi, always Semper Fi. So he has seen this. He sees this from a Catholic, moral, theological standpoint in his writing, and he has military experience. And so for me, we have to just start with the basics that if we merely say we need to, it's okay to do something if it results in greater consequences in the long run. If that is our only criteria, then any kind of murder, rape, terrorism suddenly becomes a viable option. And that is not the way civilized people should act. That even in war, what makes humans different than animals, because animals even go to war with each other. There are colonies of ants that'll fight each other. What makes humans different is that we understand that moral truths apply even in war, which is why we believe there are things called war crimes, and that we ought not treat civilians and even other soldiers in horrific ways. And I think when we look at, if you just see what these nuclear devices did in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, it was truly horrifying what happened to the civilians there. And it's just not something we as civilized people should support, no matter the consequences. So, yeah, go to the website, Catholic.com. Search Hiroshima at Catholic.com. It'll probably be the first one that comes up. And that should be helpful for you.
Thanks, Rob. 888-318-7884, our number. Which Catholic moral teaching do you reject? Let's go to Noah in New Brunswick, Canada, watching on YouTube. Thanks for wrong button. Thanks for watching on YouTube, Noah. Which Catholic moral teaching do you reject?
Like, so this is coming from like the interpretation of a 13-year-old, but it would be abortion that I have.
Okay. What is your concern about the Church's teaching on abortion?
Well, like, my concern, or it's not really a concern, I just have a question. If it's not okay to, or like, why is it not, or I guess it's more of a question, why is it not okay to like get an abortion if you were the one who chose to, or what morals do you apply by? Like, what, how do you decide what a moral is from abortion? Like, why? Because society created our own morals by our own government. So what? without like, how would you decide what, like, if it's immoral to kill, even if it, like, that's in the Bible, is immoral, right. Like, what else can you back it up with?
Well, no, what I would say is that there is a moral law that deep down human beings have a sense of what is right and what is wrong. And that's a moral law that we have a moral sense in our conscience that we can detect and we can find. That humans discovered morality, but they did not invent morality, because we couldn't all get together. We could try, but it would be a lie if we all got together and said, you know what, slavery's okay now, or genocide and rape are okay now. It wouldn't be the case. Just as we could all get together and say the earth is flat, well, it's not. It would still be round. That morality is not merely a matter of opinion, because if it were, if morality were just opinions, you could never be mad at anyone for their moral choices. Because think about things that are just opinions. You know, what ice cream flavor is best? What sports team is the best? You know, what hockey team in Canada is the best? You don't get mad at somebody who has a different opinion on hockey. Well, Canada, who knows? I don't know. Maybe you do. But you don't get mad at someone if they like a certain kind of ice cream, they like a certain kind of sport. That's just their opinion. But you would get mad at someone if they had a moral opinion that it's okay to rape women if they never find out about it, or steal from people. We get mad and say, no, you shouldn't do that. That is wrong. So we understand this sense, and so we can know these moral truths by reflecting on them. And God communicates his moral truths through us through his revelation, like in the Bible or in what the church teaches. So when it comes to abortion, I think most of us agree you shouldn't kill innocent human beings. And abortion is the act of killing an innocent human being when they're in the womb. So if we don't kill human beings and the baby in the womb is a human being, we shouldn't kill them with abortion. That, I think, makes a lot of sense. So you were wondering about an issue and also a moral foundation. So what do you think of that?
Yeah, but how we didn't discover morality. We technically created morality based on, like, so we didn't just, yeah, God created morality, but some people chose to refuse or refuse that morality, and we created our own. Mm-hmm. Laws in this society.
Sure.
So,
Noah, can I ask you a question? Could it be possible for, let's say, you know, up in Canada or wherever you live, could it be possible for the government to pass an unjust or an evil law?
Yes.
What would you do if they did that?
I could do nothing, honestly.
Would you try to change the law if you could?
It would take hundreds and hundreds of people to do that.
Sure, but would you be willing to join people who wanted to change it and make it right again?
Yeah.
I didn't hear your answer, Noah.
Oh, yeah. My dog just knocked something over. But yeah.
Yes, okay. How would you know that the law is evil or wrong? How would you know that?
Well, that's because they created their own standard of morality, and that would be afflicting, like, what I created for my own morality.
So you have your own moral standard that you use to judge things.
Yeah, you can create your own moral standard.
Well, I agree with you, Noah, that you can have your own moral code. You have your own beliefs about what's right or wrong. Everybody has a moral code, things they think are right and think are wrong. Can I ask you a question, though? Do some people, is their moral code wrong in serious ways? Like, do you think a child molester's moral code, where he thinks pedophilia and molesting a kid, he thinks it's right, and that's his moral code, but would you say that he's wrong?
No. Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. Thank you. Good. So if you say he's wrong, then that means our moral code is not the standard for morality. It's merely what we believe, and our code could be right or it could be wrong. And to determine that, we have to find a standard beyond us. And I think the ultimate standard beyond us is that God is perfect goodness itself. And God is the perfect standard of morality and goodness. He created us. He gave us his law and revelation. And then he also gave us his law, his moral law written on our hearts, that if we form our consciences right, we can come to know it. So Noah, why don't you hang on the line? Let's get your email and your address. If it's feasible, I'd love to send you a copy of my book, Why We're Catholic. And I talk a little bit about morality in there. And that, I think that should be helpful for you. Otherwise, I think the rest of the book is a lot of great stuff. And if it's feasible, we'll even send it to Canada. If not, we might have to send you an electronic copy. But stay on the line, Noah, and let's get your email and your address and try to get you a copy. But thank you for calling in.
Is the dog all right, Noah?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thanks for that call, Noah. 888-318-7884, the number. Trent Horn is our guest. All of Trent, or a couple of the very best of Trent Horn's pro-life materials are on sale for just $5 now at shop.catholic.com, Persuasive Pro-Life and Making the Case for Life, the book and the video. If you would like those, more folks who disagree with Catholic moral teaching when we come back with Trent Horn on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Every question is important. Ask yours today on Catholic Answers Live.
It might be said that anti-Catholic notions of the Church's history are the original fake news. With all the misinformation being spread, where does one look for the truth? In The Real Story of Catholic History, Professor Steve Weidenkopf gives you the facts on over 50 of the most common misconceptions about Catholic history and shows how to answer them simply and powerfully. Whether it's to answer claims about Catholicism's supposedly pagan origins, old myths about the Inquisition that never seem to go away, or more modern errors that anti-Catholics put forth, The Real Story of Catholic History is an essential resource for every Catholic's bookshelf. Order your copy of The Real Story of Catholic History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
As the legend goes, the Protestant Reformation began when Martin Luther nailed a list of his grievances with the Catholic Church to the door of All Saints Church in Wittenberg, Germany. But do you know the whole story? In Catholic Answers' brand new documentary, The Protestant Revolution, you will hear from top apologists Tim Staples, Jimmy Akin, Carla Broussard, Trent Horn, and Steve Weidenkopf as they expose the errors of Martin Luther and of the other so-called reformers. This DVD will give you a clearer understanding of our Protestant brothers and sisters, and you will be better equipped to engage them about what separates us and about what unites us. Order your copy of The Protestant Revolution today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting shop.catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
EWTN, teaching the truth.
Listening to your program has really touched my heart, and I just see such love and beauty, not only for Christ, but for people in general in the Catholic Church. And now I feel like I need more. I want to serve God more. I feel it so much that He's given me a gift to serve and to touch people, to love people. What would it take for me to maybe look into the priesthood?
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn is our guest. Our topic, well, any Catholic moral teaching that you disagree with. Is there something that the Catholic Church teaches or holds as a moral truth that you are opposed to or in disagreement with or maybe have rejected for other reasons? 888-318-7884. Our number, 888-318-7884. And Trent, I'll just let you know, monitoring Facebook a little bit. A fan of yours from Cebu, Philippines, said, "Finally, Trent Horn back on again." So that was Merla in Cebu, Philippines.
Well, thank you very much, Merla. And I've never been to the Philippines, but hopefully I'll go someday because I've actually gotten a lot of positive feedback from supporters there. So maybe one day I'll get to visit and say hi in person.
Do you like pancit or lumpia? You should try them if you have.
Oh,
those are...
I have not enjoyed a lot of Filipino cuisine, but I always enjoy
in for a
that,
treat.
That, so that would be super fun.
Yeah, and one great thing is like if you get even a few, I suppose it maybe is like the Italians or the French or something. You get a few Filipinos together, and there's going to be food and it's going to be good.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. They're not joking is around it, about that.
Now, who is the priest, the cooking priest? It's Father Leo, right?
Linghug?
Padalinghug?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I don't know if he was from the Philippines or not, but that would make sense if he is the cooking priest.
Yeah, so. Right. 888-318-7884, the number. Thanks. I like saying hi to the folks in the Philippines because we do have a lot of listeners in the Philippines, and we do appreciate that. Michael in Cincinnati, Ohio, is on the line now. What is the Catholic moral teaching that you object to, Michael?
Well, I'd like to get clarity about the one new man teaching that Paul has in the church's stance on our moral obligation as Gentile Christians to pursue our Jewish elder brothers, principally from Ephesians and Romans 11. Mm-hmm. Could you comment on that? That I haven't seen that as a principal obligation that St. Paul gave us to pursue them in a complementary way.
You haven't seen it where? What do you mean?
Well,
like in the Catholic Church?
Correct, yeah. To my understanding, Pope John the 23rd was one of the first pontiffs to honor the Jewish people as far as validating our obligation to uphold that covenant that God has with the Jewish people. But we, and then John Paul II and Odonum Sint was saying that there's still this unfolding mystery of visible unity of Jew and Gentile. And I just wanted to know, aren't we, like what St. Paul says in Romans 11, to be as wild branches grafted in, that we're not the roots, we're supported by the roots, and that we're to live our life in such a way that we make the Jews envious for the gospel. For if their hardening of their heart is our opportunity to believe as Gentiles, what will happen when they do believe, but life for the world? So there's this, and then Paul explains more in Ephesians, the cross was given to bring down the dividing wall between Jew and Gentile, male and female, that we become one body. So that covenant contrast is us, really, as Gentile Christians, being like the feminine dynamic of the complementary whole of the body.
And let me jump in a little bit. Okay, let me jump in a little bit on this because we're touching on a lot of different issues. If we look at what the Second Vatican Council taught about the relations between the church and non-Christian religions, it talks about a certain type of familiarity, of course, that Jews and Christians have, sharing the Old Testament and the covenants that were placed there. But the desire, of course, is always for those who are Jewish today to come to know the Messiah, that the Jews wait patiently for the Messiah, and the Messiah will return. We know, of course, the Messiah did come once when Jesus was incarnate, but he will return again at the end of time. So both Christians and Jews, in a sense, can be patiently waiting for the Messiah, but our goal is always to evangelize and to help our Jewish brothers and sisters come to know that it is Jesus who is the Messiah, and the kingdom of God has come into earth through the Catholic Church. So when we look in Romans 11, for example, we see Paul talking about this, about Jews and Gentiles coming together to be, that the Gentile Christians who might have been far away from God because they didn't have the old covenant are now grafted in to this olive tree, and Paul, even at the end of Romans 11, has a hope that all of Israel will be saved, even though when he was writing, many of the Jewish people had rejected Jesus being the Messiah, just as many Jews today, of course, because they're Jews, they don't believe Jesus is the Messiah. So it's important to know, and this comes up sometimes also when people talk about recent statements by like Pope Francis about whether we should proselytize Jewish people. The term proselytizing has a very technical term in Catholic documents. It usually refers to kind of forcing or coercing someone to become Christian. We shouldn't do that. And that has happened, unfortunately, in the history of relations between Jews and Christians. So that's why there's a hesitancy about wanting to repeat those same mistakes. Rather, we should engage in evangelization towards our Jewish brothers and sisters. So I'd recommend for you a great book by Roy Schumann. It's called Salvation is from the Jews. Roy is Catholic, but the book talks about how salvation ultimately comes from the Jewish people, given to us through the church, of course, because Jesus and the apostles were Jewish, and how even Jews today can find a home in the Catholic Church. So the book is Roy Schumann's Salvation is from the Jews, and that might help clear up a little bit more what you're talking about with Ephesians and what Paul writes in Romans. So thank you very much for calling.
Thank you very much for that call, Michael. We go now to Tom in St. Louis, Missouri, listening on 92.7 FM. Tom, thank you for your call. You are on with Trent Horn. Hi, Tom. Oh, wait, I think Tom's catching up to us. Tom? Oh,
I'm here.
Oh, you're there. Okay. Tom, you're on with Trent Horn.
Yep. Thank you. I accept and I understand the concept of the reason for contraception, talk about unitive and procreative, and the principles of it. The problem I'm having is applying it to the situation. I'm a social worker, and I deal with foster children, and they've been traumatized by abuse and neglect, and they haven't had proper parenting and raising. Then we're asking, you know, we come to a dilemma where we're asking our teenage foster children to abstain, and they don't have the tools and the seeming ability and the raising to know how to be self-disciplined and they don't know how to be, they have a hard time taking care of themselves. How can they take care of children? So, you know, our agency advocates for the kids to use contraception. Now, I struggle with this, you know, being a Catholic in a secular institution. But in some ways, I sympathize toward it because they don't know how to be parents. If they don't have the tools to be parents, they don't have the tools to be responsible to abstain. They don't understand what that all means. So do we want to continue the generations of, their parents were traumatized, they were traumatized, and they don't have, you know, the next generation is going to be traumatized. Isn't it the lesser of two evils? Or we could say, you know, use contraception. That's the only way that you can.
I see what you're saying, Tom, and let me jump in on that with some thoughts. Number one, the evil you're concerned about is children who are not formed well, who haven't learned virtue, haven't learned responsibility, maybe even don't know basic right and wrong. And so they're not well-formed adults. And you say, you know, that's a cycle that we need to break, that their parents weren't well-formed or were neglectful. And, you know, now you've got people who've got all kinds of psychological or physical issues. First, I would ask a question. Does contraception treat their malformation and make them responsible people? Does it change how they think and act?
No, it'll prevent the next generation from it happening.
Right, but here's the problem with that. Number one, in order for it to actually prevent another generation, what it would have to do is these children would have to use contraception perfectly and forever. Now, do you think, though, that, one, they might make a mistake, which many teenagers, especially the ones you're describing, are prone to do if they're using pills or condoms? The contraceptive failure rates with teens is extremely high because teenagers just aren't responsible. So don't you think it's, even if they're using contraception, they may fail, or they'll get older, get married or live with somebody, and just decide to have a child. And when they decide to have a child, using contraception itself, that's not going to make them responsible, healthy adults, right?
Right. Do we lose you?
Yeah. I'm just trying to prevent, for example, the case I had with a mother who she's had three kids before she's 18. Yeah. Well, she had trouble even feeding the kids regularly. She had an in-home nurse come every week and weigh them. And, you know, it's just a constant battle of just trying to keep these kids healthy when they're infants and one, two years old.
Right. And Tom, I see where you're coming from. And like I said with a caller on the previous hour, you know, when we have these really tough and hard situations, a lot of times two solutions come up to us. An easy one that kind of makes us morally uncomfortable, at least a little bit, and a hard one that makes us uncomfortable because we're not sure if it's going to work and it seems like a ton of work. But I think that especially with teenagers, with children who are in poverty, who are in difficult situations, we should treat them like human beings and say, no, I am sorry that, you know, your parents or your grandparents failed you and you didn't get the upbringing you deserved, but you can learn how to be a healthy, responsible adult. You have that power within you. Nobody can take that away from you. And providing them with mentors and advice to say, no, you can break this cycle. You can decide. You don't want to be raising three children on your own with a boyfriend who runs out the door because you're having relations with men and you're not married. Or a man, you're not going to have to worry about fathering eight children and having to provide for them. And, you know, to let them know, yes, you can rise above this, and to give them this the emotional, mental, and spiritual values to do that, rather than just any kind of just a quick and easy solution that I don't think is going to work because it's not going to break the cycle. They're still going to have these bad parenting habits, these irresponsible habits, and they'll just probably end up having children and maybe on their own when they want to, and the cycle continues. It sort of reminds me of that movie Stand and Deliver. You're familiar with the movie Psy, Stand and Deliver?
I am not. No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, well. We were talking about
an asteroid in it, does it?
No, it's based on the true story of Jaime Escalante. He was a math teacher in Los Angeles, and he had kids that were just, you know, on the verge of dropping out.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids came from really, really rough homes. And people said, you know, I'm sure some people would have said to him, look, just pass them, let them cheat on the tests, get them out of here so they at least have a diploma and maybe they'll do something. But that's a quick, easy fix, and if it's cheating, it's an evil fix. Rather, what he did was he poured himself into these kids from broken homes, from violent homes, and he taught them so well that they passed the advanced placement calculus exam, and a year earlier, some of them couldn't do basic math. The change was so great, people thought that they cheated, and they retook the test. So I tell that story, Tom, and for our listeners, because it's kind of nice to look at real-life incidents where people are dealing with cases of people down on their luck in the roughest kinds of living situations, but see within that person a human being who has the potential to use the gifts that God has given them, to allow God's grace to work in their hearts, to become that person God wants them to be. And if we believe in that person and help them to do that, that's better than just giving them a purely, you know, halfway solution or giving them evil means to try to prevent evil. I mean, through a running theme through this show, we've talked about nuclear weapons, we're talking about contraception. A running theme is this: to help another human being, we should always try to do good by that human being and help them be the person God wants them to be. And God can help them do that. We should never do evil so that good can come from it, whether it's nuclear weapons, contraception, abortion. Don't do evil so good may come. Instead, conquer evil with good. That's what Paul writes in his letter to the Romans. Don't do evil for good. Let's conquer evil with the good. And that's, I think, what we should live by.
And that's a perfect spot to take a break. Tom, thank you so much for that call. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Don't you just love listening to Trent Horn? Did you know you can book Trent or any of our other great speakers to speak at your parish or special event? Contact one of our seminar coordinators through the Speakers Bureau section on Catholic.com today to find out more information.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Do you subscribe to Catholic Answers Magazine? We hope, but if not, right now we've got a deal that you're going to love. We've reduced the price and thrown in a free digital subscription when you subscribe. That's right, subscriptions to Catholic Answers Magazine just got cheaper, $10 less on one-year subscriptions and $20 less on two-year subscriptions. And right now, when you purchase a subscription, you get a subscription to the digital edition added to your order for free. With a deal like that, it's the perfect gift for friends, family members, seminarians, your priest, even yourself. When you get right down to it, what other gift has the potential to touch hearts and reap eternal rewards? Log on today to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com and sign up yourself, your friends, and your family for a magazine that is bound to make a difference in their lives and the lives of those they meet. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. What Catholic moral teaching do you reject? That is the question of the hour. Trent Horn is here to address that question, and we go right away to Colleen in Salem, Oregon. Colleen, you are on with Trent Horn. Which Catholic moral teaching do you reject?
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me? Oh, yeah, you can. I think you pretty much answered my question with the last caller, actually, which I agree with everything you said wholeheartedly. But I had heard a video, I think her name was Cecile. You were having a talk about abortion, and she had asked if contraceptives were okay, and you had said any contraceptive that doesn't harm the baby. And I was wondering, and from what you just said, it sounds like you're completely against contraceptives, but in the talk, I was confused.
Sure.
Wait a second. There's somebody else there with
like
you.
Sounds like you've got someone else with you there.
My daughter. Colleen.
Oh, that's wonderful. I say hi to her as well. Colleen, what you're referring to was not a talk. It was a debate that I had on whether abortion should be legal at CSU San Marcos several years ago. One of my first debates, actually, in my career of doing these kinds of things. And I was debating a women's studies professor, Cecily Chadwick. And so during our cross-examination period, she was asking me point blank, do I think contraceptives should be illegal? Now, you have to remember that in a debate, number one, you want to stay focused on the main topic of the debate. If you get off the main topic, you're going to lose. The topic was abortion, not contraception. So I just did not want to go down that rabbit hole at all. It wasn't germane to the topic of the debate. And number two, in a live debate, you don't always phrase things as articulately as you want to. The point I was trying to make about the question of the legality of contraception was that I was not opposed to contraception being legal, provided that that contraception did not harm an unborn child. Now, if I could say it again, I would say the exact same thing. I'm not opposed to the legal availability of contraception, provided it doesn't harm an unborn child, unless we could show contraception was a threat to the common good of society. In order to make the case something should be illegal, then you have to provide reasons that it's a threat to the common good, not just that it's wrong. Because, for example, it's wrong to not go to Mass on Sunday, especially if you're Catholic, but really anybody. Because we should all worship God as he has told us how to worship him. But I'm not going to pass a law that says, hey, if you're Catholic, you got to go to Mass on Sunday or you're going to be fined $100. You know, if it's the law, it's got to relate to the common good of society. I didn't, of course, as I said, with debates, you don't necessarily say all the words you want to in a debate. So I should have added that. But my point then is the same as my view now, that if someone asks me, are you going to make birth control pills illegal? I'm going to say, I would only make contraception illegal if it threatened the common good of society. Then I might ask the person, do you think it threatens the common good? They'll say, no, it doesn't. And we might have a discussion about that. But in a debate on abortion, I'd keep things on abortion. But whether contraception is a threat to the common good and it should be outlawed, that's a debate and discussion that's worth having to talk about. But I just wanted to keep focus in the debate. So just to reiterate, contraception is an intrinsic evil. It's wrong. But if we were to make it illegal, we'd have to prove we'd have to show it's a threat to the common good. And so I haven't seen that case made yet. But if it were, then I might say it could be something we make illegal. So does that clear up what I meant in that case?
Yes, it does. Thankfully, I was glad because I was thinking, what? I thought you thought differently than that. But so I was just confused. But now it does. So thank you so much.
Okay, and, yeah, and it's nice finally on air to be, because I've had several people email me, because, you know, when you do a debate and you say something, your comments can follow you around. And that was just a case of me not using the precise words I really, really wanted to use in that moment. But that is the point I was trying to communicate, and I think now I've communicated with much more clarity and force, and I've done lots of debates since then, so I've learned a thing or two, which is always a good thing. So thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you, Colleen.
Oh, Cy, I have to mention one thing, though, that's on my mind.
Okay.
There's something a bit unenviable about, like, my role as a Catholic apologist now. Because, you know, I when I first arrived at Catholic Answers, I felt like I was in the Hall of Justice with, you know, Superman and Batman, like these apologetic heroes, Tim and Jimmy. And I'm like, oh, man.
Plus the fact that we keep them behind a glass case, I think that also adds to that.
Well, I mean, you got to have them when people come by, I understand. And so, you know, and here's Robin, basically, coming into the Hall of Justice, like, day one.
One of the Wonder Twins.
And I have to learn, and, you know, and I was looking back, and I was talking with Jimmy at, like, my very first meeting with him. It was the inquisition to see if I had the right stuff to be an apologist. And he said something that still warms my heart to this day. He says, "You and I are very similar, just at different points on the timeline." And so I'm like, well, that's so nice. Thank you. And just seeing, like, you know, as Jimmy and I more have talked, that, like, when I look back at, like, old cassette recordings, like, of Tim or, like, Jimmy when he was my age, just starting out doing apologetics, you know, Tim and Jimmy, when they were my age, they're still learning. They're still learning a bunch of stuff. They will tell you, from the time they were my age until today, they've learned a ton. Now, what's unenviable is that, you know, they'll learn and they'll maybe go out and do things. And maybe if they make a mistake, well, it's on some cassette tape somewhere, you know. But mine might end up being more on YouTube, because everything that happens is digitized now.
That's funny to think about that. Yeah,
so
right.
it's a lot harder to be a Catholic apologist starting out in 2017 than 1997.
Yeah, it'll be like 20 years from now. Trent, remember when you made that mistake in the summer of 2016? I'd be like, oh, man, when am I ever going to live that down?
Well, that's why you have to be humble and say, I'm only human. We're all learning and trying to do our best to share the truth. But it reminds me of... sentiments that both Cardinal Newman and G.K. Chesterton said that amounted to this: if something is worth doing, it's worth doing badly.
Yeah.
Well, that's what Chesterton said. Newman said, if a man waited to do something until it was perfect, nothing would ever get done.
All right.
That's kind of what we have to do, that we have to go out and share the gospel so that the Holy Spirit can convert hearts and help to move people's hearts and souls closer to the gospel. And we're imperfect. And God, in his grace... he's chosen imperfect people like us to do that because he's so gracious. And in the letter to the Corinthians, when Paul is recounting what God has said to him, God says, my strength is made perfect in weakness. That he chooses the foolish, the weak of the world to upend the strong and the wise by the proclamation of the gospel.
Amen to that, brother. And I think you get a lot of support from that from Pope Francis as well, who's been really strong in saying, get out there and share the good news and don't wait around to become a professional. Sharing the good news is for everybody. Not that you're not a professional. You are a professional, Trent. But
And with Pope Francis, a good dose of humility. I think there is a story that at the dinner with the other cardinals after he was elected, he raised a toast and he said to them after his election, "May God have mercy on all your souls."
A lot of popes have said that. Yeah. Clearly you all made a mistake, but here we go.
Here we go.
Yeah.
So you have to understand that God does not call the equipped, he equips the called. And that's true for everybody listening today. If you feel God is calling you to evangelize, do mission work, work in an apostolate, and you're scared, like, well, I'm not equipped enough. God equips the called, doesn't necessarily call the equipped.
Right. And, you know, it's funny that we would know that, okay, if I want to learn to play basketball, I know I got to go out and practice and work. I'm going to lose some games. But when it comes to love and charity and evangelization, we act like either I've got to be St. Francis right off the bat, or why bother?
Right. And you know what? I mean, that's a lack of confidence at least. And at worst, that's the sin of pride. That's the sin of pride, saying my personal feelings and stature matter more than what God wants.
That's right. I don't care that I'm a terrible radio host. I'm still here going to do this for Jesus, no matter how bad I am.
If that's what God wants, that we put what God is calling us to over our own desires, even when they're, especially when they're being selfish, and to trust in God in everything we do.
Yep. And Trent Horn, thanks very much. Another two excellent hours with Trent Horn. It was a lot of fun.
It was. Thank you, Si.
Thank you. And tomorrow, open forum, 2 hours. First hour, Mark Brumley will be here, the president of one of the greatest publishing houses in the universe. And second hour, Jimmy Akin, our own Jimmy Akin. We'll be, well, God willing, we'll see you then on Catholic Answers Live.